101.4 on FM Sport.
Listening to me, Peter Davis, on the 90-minute football show, the home of West London football. Fan show presented by fans for the fans. We're obviously going to cover Chelsea in detail very soon. Manchester United beat Fulham 3-0. Queen's Park Rangers had a good result up at Bramall Lane. That was 1-1. And Brentford, we'll be speaking to the Brentford fan, Stuart, a bit later on. And obviously a six-goal thriller at Griffin Park. But first of all, let's talk Chelsea. We've been joined today. We have our normal resident Ian.
How you
doing, Pete? David, presenter of Host Chelsea Fancast and writer of CFC Net and CFC UK. Good evening to
you. Good evening, all.
Let's talk about the Chelsea game first of all. And obviously, you've got a big week coming up. But the main match over the weekend was the win against West Ham. As comfortable as anything, wasn't it? I can see you're both quite smug and raring to go on this one.
Well, great performance, lovely to score four against any side, and when it's one of the London rivals, then all the better. The thing for me was, it's easy to look at that scoreline and say, oh yeah, easy for Chelsea, never out a third. But the fact is, West Ham actually put in a pretty good shift. Certainly through the first half, they were very, very good. Second half, we overpowered them a little bit, but West Ham weren't bad at all. A performance like that on Tuesday would be absolutely brilliant, but it was great to see a nice performance. It was great to see Malouda playing up the park rather than fullback. Lovely to see Zhirkov come back, obviously, with Tuesday night in mind as well. And a couple of goals from Drogba as well.
The good old Drogs. I think the best thing, Ian, was that it was just like a proper day of football yesterday. God's chosen time for football, 3 o'clock. It so rarely happens as a Chelsea fan that you get to see a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
When was the last time you had a 3 o'clock
game? I mean, somebody will tell me probably last week, but I mean, you know, it never feels like it. And it was just lovely getting the pub before at a proper time, you know. Mm. So there was a lovely kind of, we were all happy before we went to the game, but nothing is better than doing, you know, the Hammers 4-1 at home. It's just lovely. Shutting them up.
And it does put paid to the theory, because they've played a lot together now, Drogba and Anelka, that these two can play together.
Well, it's absolutely rubbish. I mean, if you remember when he got him, Grant got him, and there was all this nonsense about they can't play together. I mean, Hiddink proved that was rubbish. And for most of this season, you know, when they played together, they'd been fine. There was a fantastic article in the Chelsea magazine in about November, and Anelka was saying that his role really is a 9.5. By which he means he can play as a proper number 9, but he can also move around that position between, you know, the traditional number 9 and the number 10. And I think that's what he does. And if they switch it around, they can be absolutely unbeatable. They really can.
Would you not prefer to see Joe Cole playing wide right?
I just prefer to see Joe Cole playing the team, period, at the moment. And one of the nicest things yesterday, I mean, I know it was all about Malouda yesterday, and he did have an unbelievably brilliant game. But, I mean, for the last 15, 20 minutes when Joe Cole came on, I mean, that cameo was, you know, that shows why we cannot get rid of Joe Cole. I mean, the tricks and stuff he was doing, he was absolutely awesome when he came on.
Will Joe Cole be a Chelsea player next season?
We were talking about this last week, obviously, and my opinion hasn't changed in that week. I think he's not only Chelsea's most creative player, he's also one of England's most creative players. Let's get him on a new contract at Chelsea. We can't afford to lose Joe Cole.
Does it worry either of you at all?
I tuned in
yesterday to full time on the BBC as the results were coming in, and Gary Pallister seemed to let slip that from what he'd heard, Manchester United had offered Joe Cole a contract in the summer, and they made quite a big deal out of the fact that that hadn't been reported in any of the press, and Gary Pallister was maybe given out a bit of an exclusive by accident air. Would that worry you?
This is the worrying thing for me. I mean, I hadn't considered Manchester United. My worry, to be honest with you, was rather Man City. But it's very easy to imagine, and I don't doubt for a second that this is already happening, that people are coming to Joe Cole and saying, well, hey, if we didn't have to pay you at a transfer fee to Chelsea, then you could be earning 100 and stupid thousand a week, every week with us.
I was going to say, are you privy to information about what Joe Coe is earning compared to the likes of John Terry, Frank Lampard? Is it way behind?
No, I'm not, because I'm not his agent and I'm not Bruce Buck. So, I mean, you know, this is the bottom line. Mm. Nobody knows. Mm. And I mean, I was saying to Ian before the show, we had a massive rant about this, particularly me. Joe Cole is my absolute favourite Chelsea player, has been since the minute he put that number 10 shirt on. You know, this is a guy that stood in the shed end as a kid supporting the club. He bleeds blue.
He didn't support West Ham then?
No, he did not support West Ham. Born in Islington, and most of his family are Arsenal fans. Oh, no, actually, they're all Chelsea fans. Who would want to be an Arsenal fan, for God's sake? But the bottom line is, you do not get rid of players like that, particularly in this day and age when most of them are foreign, most of them come over here for the money. You know, Joe Cole is gold dust to this club.
But as it stands, he probably isn't on that plane in the World Cup, is he?
Because, well, you know, I'm not sure about that. I mean, if he can put in performances for 90 minutes like he did for 15 or 20 yesterday, Capello's no mark, he'll pick him. I mean, you look what he did again in the Croatia match when we stuffed them out there. I mean, Joe Cole is one of Chelsea and England's best players on his day.
But then the same argument could be said about Theo Walcott, who's had a good few games for England.
Yeah, but Joe Cole's done it for 5 years, not 5 minutes, like Walcott has.
Yeah, Walcott, to be fair, while he's been absolutely fantastic at times for Arsenal, I can only really think of one England game where Theo Walcott really did it.
And that's because Joe Cole was passing him the ball.
Well, yeah, very true.
We can see you really like him a lot.
Well, I do. I mean, look, just to kind of pick on what I was saying, I mean, we had a massive rant on the Chelsea fancast yesterday, because a lot of people have been coming on the Facebook group and basically giving Joe a hard time, which I just find unbelievable for a start. But I mean, you know, after a bit of a healthy discussion yesterday on the show, we suddenly kind of occurred to us, you know what, this sounds very, very familiar and similar to what it was like when the whole rumours about Lampard going to Barcelona a couple of years ago. And I mean, so many people in the game who have the inside track, oh, Lampard's definitely going, he didn't go. Mm. You know, and I think the one thing that really encouraged me this weekend was Carlo Ancelotti coming out on Friday saying he's 100% sure that Joe Cole will stay. Now, Ancelotti, I think, is a man of his word. This is the man that said, if we sign anybody in the January transfer window, I will run around Cobham with no clothes on. We had a song about that, but I couldn't possibly sing it here. But anyway, you know, I think he's a man of his word. So if he's coming out in the media and saying that, it gives me a little bit of hope.
In relation to the goalkeeping situation, you're in a little bit of trouble there. I mean, obviously Turnbull number three, but you favour him over Ilario.
I personally do, yes. I mean, again, last week we discussed Ilario, and while he's a Portuguese international now, one cap against China, I believe. But in all the time that he's been playing for us, and it has been a few seasons now, and with injuries to Cech and Cudicini, he's played a good few minutes in goal for Chelsea Football Club. And
it's a baptism of fire on Tuesday night.
That Man City game was the first time that he's ever cost us anything. So
to be fair, Ian, he has looked a bit, you know, dodgy as a lot
he
of European
kids. Never kick. Looks like a goalkeeper.
I remember his first game for Chelsea, and he came in and he had to play against Barcelona. And he was outstanding that night, and he didn't let us down. And to be fair, I don't think he really has. I thought Turnbull did all right yesterday, but then I probably would have done all right having to watch the game for 90 minutes and make one save. So, you know, who knows?
Moving on to the game on Tuesday night, this week has actually shown there's a big gap, if you like, between the British sides and the European sides. Are you nervous about the game on Tuesday night, or do you think that it will be a comfortable victory?
First of all, very well done, Manchester United and Arsenal. They've set the bar
tough game,
pretty high there. I am a little worried. this Mourinho chap of theirs, we've seen a few games of his. He's very, very capable of grinding out a 0-0 or even sneaking a 1-0 win. I think we should beat them. I think on paper we're a far stronger side. But there's just something in that Jose Mourinho story, isn't there? He'll get a tremendous reception. I'm absolutely certain at Chelsea. But it does occur to me that sometime during Tuesday night, we'll all hate him because of something he said or something he's done. Because that's Jose Mourinho, isn't it? That's Jose.
I'm not worried at all, actually. That's probably because I'm an idiot and I always get the predictions wrong. But frankly, we cuffed them over there. And to come away losing 2-1 to them was, you know, I was really surprised because I thought we were the much better side. I got the feeling watching the leg in Milan that actually Mourinho's pretty scared of coming to the Bridge. I think he knows that pound for pound, You know, Chelsea have got better players than Inter Milan. And I think he went out to try and to win the tie in the first leg, and he didn't. So, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting seeing him come back. I think he might try and park the bus, which would be quite funny considering that he came up with that term originally.
It'll be interesting to see if Lucio can repeat his performance.
He played well, didn't he, to be fair? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we had, again, we discussed this on the fancast yesterday, but, you know, for me, it depends on about three or four really key things. The first thing is that we've got to have a referee who is not biased towards UEFA, which would make a nice change, wouldn't it, Ian?
It would.
The goalkeeper, which I now gather is going to be Turnbull, has to have a good game. It has to be solid at the back. And we have to score an early goal. If Inter score first, we've got to score three goals to get through. Mm. And that's tough against anybody. And the other thing, the crowd have absolutely got to get on it. They've got to get right behind the team.
Do the flags come out Tuesday night?
The free ones? I haven't seen the free ones for a while. I'm missing my free flag, actually.
But you only normally do it at the really big games, like semi-finals.
If there's a game for a free flag, this is the game for a free flag.
I don't think we can afford them anymore. If we can't afford to pay Joe Cole what he's worth, we certainly can't afford to be spending our
money. How would the atmosphere be, do you sense, on Tuesday night? Will it be going in there with a bit of apprehension? You think
it'll be rocking. I mean, I know so many. I mean, we always meet up in this in the pub called the Malt House down in Chelsea before the games, and we get people coming over who listen to the show from America. I mean, one guy turned up from Oklahoma one weekend just to go and turn up to come and have a drink with us. And I know loads of people who are coming in at, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock to get really steamed up before the game. It'll be rocking in there on Tuesday night.
A slightly separate issue from Chelsea itself. We've got an email from Luke in Shepherd's Bush. He's asked in regards to England and whether both JT and Rio, knowing that they're not nowhere near their best, can we go there confidently with those two at the centre pairing?
To England?
Yeah.
What's the alternative, though? It would be my question. I mean, this is it.
No, thank you.
You look through. I mean, it is a problem. It is, or at least it would be a problem if the World Cup were starting tomorrow, because England has two players playing at anything like the top of their game, and that's Rooney for one, and I would say Milner is the other one. Frank Lampard is playing fairly well, and one or two others are playing okay, but. As a squad, if you look through the players that are likely to make up that England squad, there are an awful lot that are not playing well. But that doesn't matter today.
Is John Terry over his worst of his bad form? Because he's not had a. I mean,
I'm not having this. I mean, you know, he didn't have a particularly good year last year. But I mean, you know, he was suffering from a back injury for most of the season, and he played through it as he does. I thought, actually, prior to the big scandal, the Wayne Bridgegate, or whatever you want to call it, I think he was absolutely back to his best. That was the proper JT that we know and love. You know, the game after the news broke was against Burnley away. He was the man of the match. You know, scored the winner. What more do you want? Okay, he had a couple of duff games after that, but people do. You know, it's a professional football. You don't play 150% every game. Stoke, he was right back on it. He was, again, one of the men of the match, got the winner.
Man City was poor. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the whole team were poor, Pete. Mm. They all went, I mean, you know, they all went mad. They just lost it. They lost the plot in that match in the second half. They chased the game, left holes at the back, and that was the whole team. It wasn't just JT.
Going back to the Premiership, obviously Chelsea have been overtaken today by Manu. You've got that game in hand.
I'm ignoring that.
Who do you fear most? Is it Arsenal or is it Manchester United?
Manchester United for me as well.
Because they win it. They know how to win it.
If you beat Manchester United, you win the Prem.
Good point.
Okay, we're going to take a small short break. We're going to have a Chelsea song.
Oh, jolly good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is it clean?
It's a bit of madness, One Step Beyond. And after, we're going to be talking about the Premiership.
Oh, last time we heard this, we were top of the table.
The nuttiest sounds around. So if you're coming off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat.
101.4 on FM Sport.
This is the 90 Minute Football Show. We do want your emails, actually. 90minutefootballshow@onfmradio.co.uk. We have got an email, actually. Paul asked, we had this question before, but I'll put this one to David. Are you concerned about the age of the Chelsea team?
That's a really good question. I mean, personally, I would be, because, you know, I'm a great believer in the fact. I mean, the Premiership is the fastest league in the world, physically most demanding league in the world. And, you know, it worries me that quite a few of our players. I mean, you know, I love Michael Ballack, for example. I think he's a great player, but I think his legs are going. I think you could say the same about Carvalho. But what worries me is that Ancelotti, of course, has got this track record of playing people like Maldini and Costa Curta until they're about 73. You know, and I hope he hasn't been brought in to do the same at Chelsea to make sure that we don't have to go and buy anybody for lots of money, you know, which is clearly on the agenda, isn't it?
It's true to say that that careers are extended, though, these days. It's not like
they've got a physio or somebody that's helped Beckham out. I mean, there's a lot of serious medical science going on to sustain their careers. I know that. But
at the same time, I'm inclined to agree. I'm inclined entirely with David there. I think at the moment, this season and possibly next season, they're a perfectly fit and adequate, fit and excellent bunch of players. But there is going to be a time very shortly where we are going to have to replace and replace quite a lot. The question for me is how much money is Roman prepared to spend?
You say that there are two things at work here, and I think the first thing is that, you know, one thing that concerns me, you know, the pursuit of the Champions League, which for a lot of people at the club is the Holy Grail. You know, this team have been there or thereabouts for the last 5 years, and time is running out for that team to win it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that they are the ones with the best chance of doing that in the short term. On the other hand, in terms of the old players that we've got, look at some of the youngsters that we've got coming through. And I, for one, and I know a lot of Chelsea fans think the same way, would love to see a lot of the youngsters given a chance. I mean, Jeffrey Bruma at 18 is a fantastic player, and there's quite a few like that.
They're not quite as good as the Arsenal youngsters, though, are they? But we'll come on to that a bit later on. In relation to
I'd like to see them play the Arsenal youngsters. That would be a good game.
Yeah, okay, we've got another email. John, and I don't know if he's a Chelsea fan, probably not with this question. He said, was your best chance of winning the European Cup last season?
No. It was last season and the season before. We should have beaten Man United. I mean, you know, one slip. And we outplayed them. I mean, you know, okay, I know I'm biased, but, I mean, you know, I defy anybody to say that we didn't outplay United in the final. And how we were mugged off by that idiot referee from UEFA last year, I still have nightmares about it.
But do you realistically believe that you can go this year?
I don't know. I'll answer that question after May this year.
Right.
So I still got a lingering hope that we'll do it this year. But
yeah, you know. I don't see any reason why not. I don't see that we've particularly gone backwards.
Would you like to avoid... I mean, you've done well against Arsenal this season. Would you like, that's presuming you do get through, would you want to avoid the Arsenals and the Manchester United? Or
wouldn't bother me in the slightest.
You've got to beat, you know, to be the best in Europe, you've got to beat the best in Europe.
And who would that be?
I think Barcelona are still the benchmark, aren't they?
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so.
Let's focus on the Premiership itself. And Tottenham are the ones that hold that fourth spot. No one wants that fourth spot. With Manchester drawing today, Liverpool lost in the week as well. It looks like Tottenham could be the ones that grab that.
Well, I've been saying Man City for a few weeks.
I've been saying Liverpool.
I like my bet. I like my bet more, I've got to say. But you have to say Spurs are beginning to come into it. They have got some tricky fixtures over the next month or so.
I think they've got Liverpool, Manchester United and Chelsea.
They've got us at home, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so no points there. Possibly three from the Liverpool game. That doesn't seem to be quite the difficult fixture that it was in previous seasons. But for me, at the moment, it's between Tottenham and Man City. Aston Villa are a very able, very functional side. I wonder, though, if away from home, O'Neill is going to sort of come out and play the sort of expansive game that they might need to pick up sort of 3 points at difficult grounds like Stoke.
Mm. Away from the sort of the big four, if you like, or the five or six teams that have done really well this year, Birmingham, Stoke, are they surprised? I mean, Fulham's another one.
I was going to say, I've mentioned Fulham actually. Mm. I can't believe I am mentioning them, but I'm going to. But I think Roy Hodgson is probably the most underrated English manager of his generation. I mean, this is a guy that managed Inter Milan, he's managed national sides, he's come into Fulham and he's absolutely sorted them out. You know, I mean, I was reading, or I heard somewhere the other day, that apparently the coaching, that they're very, very coached these days, tactically and on skills at Fulham, in a way that they never were before. And, you know, that result against was it Schalke they knocked out?
Schalke,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were really good. I mean, I've got a lot of time for Roy Hodgson. I think he's a superb manager, and he's certainly turned that club around.
I'd have to agree with you there. I'd say that Roy Hodgson was probably the best English manager around at the moment in the world. I can't think of any other English manager, apart from maybe Neil Warnock down the road, who
he's got a bit of form going. English manager.
He's got a bit of form going, but I definitely agree there that Roy Hodgson is doing really well. And apart from today's slip up, or even Thursday's slip up, Fulham have been brilliant the last month. And I think Thursday, if they get an early goal against Juve, they could be a game on.
But can I ask you, because our Fulham fan is stuck between coming back from Italy and coming back to the UK. did try to make it on the show, but he's still on a plane. So let's ask you, because you obviously go for Craven Cottage a few times. Do you think that that game is winnable? I mean, it's, they need to get two, and Juve can't score a goal. I think Juve will score.
I tend to agree with you just on the last two games, on the game on Thursday and watching today at Old Trafford. The Fulham defence has looked ropey, especially on Thursday. Hangland came off injured today just after half time, so that doesn't bode well. They are capable of keeping a clean sheet. I don't think they actually will keep a clean sheet, but what I think will happen is if they get an early goal, Craven Cottage can be a very hard place to go and play for any team, and they've proven that this season, beating the likes of United 3-0 and beating Liverpool there as well. If they can get an early goal, and they can do it, but they must keep a clean sheet, and I can't see that happening.
I'm not so sure that the early goal is necessary. I think what they've first of all got to do is keep Juve out. If it gets to half time and that score is still 0-0, if Fulham score at any time, let's say 85 minutes, if Fulham can open the scoring 5 minutes to go, suddenly Juve are going to be very, very nervous, because one goal could put them out over a few minutes however long it is. But the most important thing for me is they must keep a clean sheet.
Can I just ask you guys, when you're watching the Juve Fulham game, bearing in mind you both support Chelsea, do you take an impartial view of that game?
I mean, look, I know this is a show with all the West London clubs. I don't really have an awful lot of antipathy for Fulham at all. I mean, as a lot of, we have a bit of derision for them, but not a lot of antipathy for them. And I watched that thinking, I hope they do them. You know, it's us against Johnny Foreigner, isn't it? I don't think like that when it's Man United, Arsenal, Liverpool now, because we're always competing with them for that, for the Champions
League. Well, as a QPR fan, hands up, I mean, I would like Milan to do one on Chelsea.
That's
just wrong, man.
Why is that wrong?
Because it's just very small-minded, I think.
For me, it's important for all of the English clubs to do well, simply because they're representing our national game. So,
yeah, but from your point of view, if Man United were in this position on Tuesday night, who would you want to win?
Manchester United and Arsenal compete the European Cup final this season, I'll be pretty pleased with that, from the point of view that it will
you
prove...
You want coefficient points, don't you, Ian?
It's important for me that our national game is seen as better than the Spanish national game.
Absolutely.
And if the final is Arsenal versus Manchester United, or Manchester United versus Chelsea, or whatever, that for me is a totally different subject,
but shouldn't the European Cup be the top team from each nation?
Totally. That's what I grew up with as a kid.
Yeah.
That's what it should be. It's rubbish that it's just a money pit. That's why they do it, where you get, you know...
Liverpool being fifth, what was all that about?
20 years ago, we were...
But then Chelsea wouldn't be in it that often, would they?
20 years ago, we were all talking...
Two times more than QPR.
Yeah.
We were all talking about a European league and how we were going to move forward and have this European league. And then when it was all kind of mooted, there was the question of how you would go about getting promotion and dealing with relegation from that league. And that was how it all went through. I think what we've got now, the Champions League as we have it now, is as close to the idea of that European league as we can get.
That's what they all want.
I can see that happening.
Yeah,
can you see that happening?
Yeah.
Going back to the Premiership, we've got about a minute before the break. West Ham obviously are near the bottom. Do you think they're one team that could be sucked into the relegation, or do you think they're weaker teams in that league than West Ham, i.e. Wolves, Burnley, and I mean some of them have done well.
It's weird, isn't it? You know, I mean, obviously I've got a huge amount of love for Clarkey and Zola, and very little love at all for West Ham. But yeah, I think actually it does break down like that every year in the Premier League. It's more about, you know, who are the worst teams in it, and there are usually worse teams than West Ham. You look at West Ham's players, they've got some good players in that team. I mean, I don't rate Upson as an England, you know, centre-back, but, you know, he's a pretty good player. Robert Green, Carlton Cole, Scotty Parker was brilliant yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, they're almost a too-good-to-go-down side, aren't they? Which actually tells you that they'll probably go down.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Well, that's the Premiership wrapped up, and obviously Chelsea wrapped up. After the break, we'll be talking about Queen's Park Rangers and Brentford, and we'll be having a sort of free-for after 8 o'clock about any subject on the West London clubs that you, the fans, want to talk about. We'll be back after this.
London is on 101.4 on FM. 101.4 on FM Sport.
This is the 90-minute football show with me, Peter Davis. I've been joined by Joe. How are you, Joe?
Mate. All right, mate. Yeah.
You were only a little bit late tonight.
I know, yeah. It's a bit of a better journey. I've got to leave a little bit earlier to get here, to be quite honest.
Have you? Right. And Stuart, the Brentford fan, we'll talk about Brentford later on, but that was a truly remarkable game. We'll talk about that. And obviously, we're still with Ian, who will probably ask one or two questions about QPR. But, I mean, we've got the dizzy heights of 15th now, Joe.
Yes. We've got a little bit of a gap now, Pete. We've got a little bit of a gap between us and Scunthorpe, who've taken third place from bottom now. I'm glad Palace got a point as well yesterday. I have to be honest, I don't particularly like Palace, but I'm glad they got a point.
Have you heard what they're going to do, though?
No.
The Warnock game, they're going to sort of boo him and have white flags.
Well, I mean, they're entitled to do what they want to do. I mean, we've hurt them quite a lot over the past 30 years regarding playing staff and managerial, so, you know, that's one of
I mean, I put up a piece up on the board earlier on about the potential, that's the wrong word, but have we been a bit unprofessional? I put this to the players, really, because Warnock has come in and suddenly we get two wins and a draw. Mm. We couldn't buy a win for the previous 14 before that. Is it down to the players? It surely can't solely be down to the manager.
I think it is down to the manager. I mean, we were playing really well under Jim McGilton, and then obviously we had that little disturbance, or so-called disturbance, with Akos Bezeki at Watford. But I think it is down to Neil. He's a character. I mean, I haven't spoken to one QPR fan that actually liked him before he came to Shepherd's Bush. Nobody liked him at all. You know, I certainly didn't like him, but why didn't we like him? The man's a winner. He gets in there, and what he does is he totally motivates players. The two games that I didn't go to Bramall Lane yesterday, but the two home games, the West Brom game and the Plymouth game on Tuesday night, same players, completely different attitude. They're working for each other. They look like they're enjoying the game. I couldn't see a goal coming Tuesday night against Plymouth from the strikers.
The fans were a little bit restless first half an hour.
Well, they were a little bit restless.
Maybe it's just towards me.
it could be. Well, you didn't take your shirt off Tuesday night. I mean, that was a godsend, really. But yeah. Same players, but I was worried. And then we got the penalty, and it seemed to settle us down a bit. So I think it definitely is down to Neil Warnock.
Because suddenly the defence looks like a defence.
The defence looks like a defence, but with Neil Warnock, it's like a father figure. Mm. You know, we've had young managers. I mean, this is the first manager down at Loftus Road for a long time that's actually been older than me.
Well, John Gorman would be a grandfather figure, wouldn't he?
There you go.
Yeah, sorry.
Pete, you'll go into the games.
Yeah.
Can I just asking about the point there of whether it's the players or the manager. Is there a difference in the QPR setup now to that which they were using sort of prior to Warnock coming in?
I think Joe's right. I think there seems to be a team spirit there now. You know, even with Neil Warnock at the end of the game getting all the players together to appreciate the fans. You know, we had games where the guys would run down the tunnel after being beat and there was no attitude there.
Or if on the odd occasion that we won a game, they were straight down the tunnel as well. But what I found as well is he's playing the same team.
The last three games, yeah.
The last three games, he's starting with the same side.
Do we already have a boo boy, though, in Priskin?
Well, did he play yesterday?
Because
I didn't really look.
And he wore the banana boots again.
Oh, well, in fairness, he didn't.
I mean, players of that ilk should not be wearing banana boots.
The two games that I've seen Priskin play, he hasn't been brilliant, but he hasn't been terribly bad. He's winning a lot of headers in the air, and he is finding a hoop shirt. As for yesterday, I mean, I've got to really leave that up to you. He hasn't been that bad, but you're right. I think, yes, there is a boo boy there, but there's also the culture that, well, if they're booing, I'm going to boo as well, regardless of whether you know anything about the game or anything. It's just, as in the same situation with Peter Ramage, who's got a heart as big as a football. Unfortunately, his skill is it's just not first class at all.
Well, the big game on Tuesday night is actually not Milan against Chelsea. It's Reading against Queen's Park Rangers.
Absolutely, Pete. And I'm definitely going to the Majetski, and I shall be supporting QPR and Milan that night, definitely.
Really? Absolutely. You're going to go for the double?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
realistically, though, can we expect anything from Reading? Reading are on fire.
Tough game. They're playing so well. You know,
but an unknown manager's gone into a club like Reading and turned it around.
Well, he's turned it around. He's obviously commanded instant respect, like, you know, and Reading had a decent win yesterday. You know, the ground's starting to fill up again. I mean, their gates went down to about 13,500. They're now
17,900.
Yeah, they're going back up to 20s again. You know, it's a lovely ground. It's one of the best, you know, grounds that I've been to. That and St Mary's, terrific ground, good atmosphere. It's a proper football ground. Unfortunately, that there's no facilities around it at all. It's just the ground and motorway.
And bus, that's it. Bus from the station.
And bus from the station and that's it, you know. But that's my only gripe against Reading. I think they're a terrific little side. They're really starting to rock and roll under the new man. And it'll be a really, really interesting game Tuesday night. So especially as Neil hasn't been beaten yet, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But that'll be interesting to see what kind of reaction the players give him back when we're behind or we lose a game, because,
well, I mean,
you know, the rag is ready to go.
Yeah, he said it himself, like, you know, I mean, we're not going to win every game, obviously, you know, as Rangers fans we know that, but definitely if we go one down, it'd be interesting to see what sort of reaction he gets from the boys on the park.
And talking about reaction, next week we are playing Swansea at home. Paulo Sousa comes back, his team are flying, although, you know, 31 goals in a season. It's going to be tough next week, but it's going to be a low-scoring one, guaranteed.
Well, they're not exactly hitting the back of the onion bag, are they, Swansea?
No.
But the fact of the matter is, yesterday they played Sheffield Wednesday, who are really rocky, aren't they? And, I mean, they've nicked a point at the new stadium, so it's going to be interesting. Prisking up front is my big ask. I mean, we've got Antonio German, who, you know, he's... Rangers fans have really taken him to heart, like, and he's 18, 19, isn't he? You know, he's just signed an extension at Loftus Road. I'd be interested to see if Neil would find a place for him, like, you know. Did Cookie play yesterday?
He came on. Yeah.
How long did he have?
30 seconds.
Oh, well.
30 seconds.
Well, basically, he's just come on for his win bonus.
Yeah.
He's
obviously keeping a settled side, and, you know, we're going to have question marks, but we had question marks against a goalkeeper, and he's done particularly well. This is a question from John in Hammersmith. It's not QPR, well, it is QPR related to a degree. Do you think Sousa could get Swansea up to the Premiership?
I think he could. I think
and could he have got QPR near there if he'd stayed?
That I don't know. I don't know what sort of response he was getting from the players, and we had all that, you know, we don't want to go into this, but he had all that so-called interference from Mr. Briatore, but I don't know if he can get them up. Possibly he can get them up, you know. What I would say is no one in the Championship has really, really impressed me at all. Even the teams that have given us an hiding, no one's really impressed me, and I can't see... Unless there's drastic changes within their squads, and I'm talking about Newcastle, West Brom, even Forest. Forest didn't really impress me at all.
Joe, can I say five words? 8 points from playoffs.
Yeah, but I'm... it's nice to think that as well, Pete, but also 6 points off relegation, so...
I was going to come in there and ask you both. 2 weeks ago, prior to Neil Warnock coming in... You guys were both terrified. You were looking at the relegation picture there.
Joe always looks terrified.
Playing well.
The fact of the matter is, I couldn't see a win from anyone. I went through, we had 15 games, and I couldn't see... I went for two wins, two possible wins. That was Doncaster and Plymouth at home. I couldn't see a win away from home. I couldn't see a point away from home. But Neil's certainly changed all that. There's a real air of optimism at Loftus Road now. There really is. And you can tell it within the fan base.
Seven points from nine in the last three games the last 2 weeks.
Are you now
looking at the playoffs, or are you still looking at the relegation picture?
I'm looking at mid-table.
I'm just looking at survival.
Yeah.
Full stop. I think I said it last week. If we finish Sheffield Wednesday are in 21st position at this moment, and that's four from bottom. If Rangers finished four from bottom... I think you'd say, yeah, job done.
But it is conceivable that in 2 weeks' time, having played Swansea at home, Derby at home, Barnsley away, and this Reading game, you know, if you get 7 out of 9 for the first three, and I don't know, if you got 9 out of 12 or 8 out of 12, that's going to put us in the mix. And I think, I don't know what the statistics are on this, but, I mean, normally it's 73 points, 72 points. Would it mean that if the table is more compact, which it is, do you think it might take less than... 72 points to get there, or do you think someone like Cardiff
Well, yeah, if the points are being shared, then logically it's not going to be as big a target to get into those sort of third to sixth place.
I mean, it could be something like 69. I mean, the lowest I think was Crystal Palace a few years ago, 69.
Was that on the Dowie, was it?
Yeah, when they made the big surge.
And there is always that thing that it's generally not the team that finishes third that progresses through the playoffs.
Yeah.
It tends to be the one that comes in late. That's kind of, you know, 18 points off the
house
off the pace, and comes in really playing up.
Yeah, previous years you can think of Crystal Palace, Sunderland did that.
Yeah,
Ipswich did that as well. Right, a few weeks ago it was a bit of Tears of a Clown. Now we're a bit more joyful, but we're going to have a bit of Tears of a Clown, and after that we'll be speaking about Brentford.
On FM Sport.
This is the 90-minute football show with me, Peter Davis. We're going to talk about Brentford now. You, Stuart, are still 15th, but you've got about 10 games in hand on everyone else because you never play at home anymore when a bit of rain, but you get a well-deserved point against MK Dons.
Yeah, another game, another draw. It's, I think, three straight draws for us. This one was a bit of a helter-skelter rollercoaster from what I hear. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the game. I was away visiting some people in Southampton.
Why?
Well, there's a trip I'd booked early doors and unfortunately I couldn't get out of, and I thought at the time, yeah, it'd be a good idea. Now, look, as I watched the scores come in, I called my dad up straight after. I was like, what has just gone on down at our place?
But you've missed one of the best game of the season.
I know. Well, I thought it was last week at least. Yeah, but it looks like this could have been, for footballing-wise, probably one of the more exciting. But from what I hear, it was a real League One battle. MK Dons apparently came down with a... probably Paul Ince's influence, quite a gritty side, put themselves about. Apparently a couple of questionable decisions from the referee, maybe a couple of players from them could have got their marching orders.
Well, reports, Szczesny 4, and apparently he was at fault for two of the goals.
I've seen the goals. He drops the catch, and he misses the cross from the second one. I mean, I don't think any Brentford fan's going to get on that man's back. If you've seen the man's a hero, like we keep talking about him, he's... genuinely the best goalkeeper. I know I've only been going since 1994. Best goalkeeper I've seen at Griffin Park for our side and an away side. He's unbelievable. People that there's recently been an article on the BBC website, is he the answer to Arsenal's problems? And there's fans from every club that we've played this season saying he's the best keeper we've had this year. The man's superhuman, and at that age he's going to make mistakes. He's 19 years of age. Do you know what I mean? He's 6'5". I know people say he should be claiming crosses, but he's going to make a few. He's going to drop a few crosses every now and then. Just happens that these two cost us goals.
What's the chances of being able to keep him for another year, or is it the loan end of the season?
Loan end of the season, he'll go to at least a Championship club. At least a Championship club. Well, I don't know what your goalkeeping situation's like.
Well, QPR's goalkeeping situation is not great. I think they're all going for a goalkeeper in the summer, but whether they would go for Szczesny, I don't know. Maybe Spironi at Palace or whatever.
Yeah.
Southampton played Leeds yesterday. Now, a couple of years ago, that was a Premiership game. 30,000 people went to see that game.
Well, obviously, 30,000. I was there visiting friends.
You went down. That's where you went to, didn't you?
30,001.
Yeah.
Southampton fan. No, yeah, I was down there, and the city was buzzing. To be fair.
Yeah.
Southampton's one of those places.
I think what happened is last week when you went at Leeds, right, you suddenly changed allegiance.
To Leeds.
Yeah.
So now I don't know where I'm next week. But yeah. Big game up at Elland Road again.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, the city down there is buzzing. And I think a lot of the locals, and I'm one of the people that I've backed them as well, and even Simon Grayson said, I think they're an outside chance to play us. I know that there are a lot of points to take up, but they've got some class players. I mean, MK Dons' dip has coincided with them losing Jason Puncheon to Southampton. They've also got Lee Barnard up front with Ricky Lambert, two of the top scorers in the league.
When are you going to catch up with the games that you lost? Because you've played 32, most other clubs have played 36.
I think they've got 9 games in 43 days, I think.
Really?
So, I mean...
how's that going to stretch the squad? I mean, how way for thin is the squad?
Well, I think we definitely need another striker, that's for certain. We've got people like Mark Phillips coming back. We've also got people out on loan ourselves. We've got Steve Cabber, who scored 2 for Burton in probably the game of the day, 6-5 against Cheltenham. I've also got Cleveland Taylor down there. But also, if you look at our bench, we've got a strong bench these days. We've got players that were at the start of the season playing regularly, who have come on the bench because we've got people in like Tumani Diagoraga from Peterborough who's coming and been a revelation.
For you to say. Have you got a game this week?
We've got a game midweek, Brighton away, that's a rescheduled one.
It's Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday night, away at the
So all these team. Big games are happening on Tuesday?
Yep, and a lot of them are away from home.
Yeah.
That's the issue. I wouldn't mind the midweek game has been at home because Griffin Park on a night game is a really good atmosphere. Most people would say it's better than a Saturday. So I'd be happy if we had all these teams coming down on Tuesday night. We picked up a win against Norwich on a Tuesday night, and not many teams have beaten Norwich this season, albeit it was at the start of the season when they probably were a bit rocky. But then we've got to go up to Stockport on Saturday, and then we go to Colchester the Tuesday after. So there's a lot of travelling, and as I say, our forward line's pretty thin, but they're still scoring goals.
You'd fancy yourself away to Stockport?
I would, but when I saw Stockport down at our place, a lot of people slated him, Gary Ablett, and said he hasn't done a great job. But to be honest, a loanee from Chelsea, actually, Liam Bridcut, was a fantastic player, but they have lost him. And to be fair, they've brought in a lot of loan players, and I think that can also work against you. Mm. A lot of teams who are sliding down the table panic and bring in four or five loan players. And although they've got this lad Johnson from MK Dons, who's a very good player, he's scored plenty of goals against us in the past, I think maybe when you're sliding, maybe you need that tight-knit group of players instead of just bringing loads of own players who potentially won't be at your club next season.
Tell us what happened off the field this week in terms of the shareholder that's put money into the club. How does that work?
Well, it's been a deal that's been most Brentford fans have known about since the start of the season, really. There's a guy called Matthew Benham who is a lifelong Brentford fan, which I think is always paramount if you've got someone taking over the club. For us, we've been lucky that most people, apart from Ron, knows.
QPR had Chris Wright.
I think it's good that you'd have a Brentford fan, lifelong supporter, who's always got the best interest in the club, looking to take club forward. And we're actually owned by the Supporters Trust, Bees United. And
how does that work? You know, you're a member of the Supporters Trust.
How does that work? So we make donations every month, and then the club have bought the club off Ron Knowles, took on a lot of debt as well. We also owe Ron Knowles money, and we've started to pay back the money to Ron Knowles. Now this deal has been in place, we've also got people like Greg Dyke, Eddie Rogers, who have made loans to the club, I believe in the region of £250,000. Now, a lot of clubs would have to pay these people back pretty instantaneously, or there's an issue with that debt increasing, the loan decreasing, but these are like non-interest loans, so that we don't have to pay back. We've had that extended again, and these are people that have been involved in the club.
Does it always, I'm not obviously having a pop at Brentford, but your fans, you know, 5,000, 6,000, does it not just defer payments all the time?
Well, I mean,
do you know what I mean? Like, you're borrowing, but not paying it back.
Well, I think this is the deal with Benham, is that he'll be putting £1 million into club over 5 years. Then over the 5 years, the idea is that he'll probably, unless Bees United pay him back the £5 million, he'll have the majority shareholder of the club, and it won't be Bees United. Bees United will have a golden share in the club, which means that there won't be a decision. He wouldn't be able to then sell Griffin Park or Lionel Road, the new ground. That Bees United would still have the final decision in that. But Benham would be the majority shareholder in the club.
But you normally look at sort of recoup money would either be through the fans or maybe a potential young player that's coming through the ranks. Have Brentford got that young player that potentially could be sold on for a couple of £1 million?
There's Ryan Dixon at left back, who I think we definitely could generate a decent transfer fee from. But my understanding is that Benham's actually himself, he gave a lot of the money for the deal originally, so I think he personally would take a lot of the money, and I don't know whether that money would go straight back into Brentford. But from my understanding of the man, he's not worried about giving a lot of money to the club, and the returns he's getting from it aren't that much. I think it's mainly a footballing interest for him, and he's not one of these chairmen that is looking to make money out of Brentford Football Club.
Okay, well, let's just take a look at that League One. I mean, Leeds are getting pretty nervous, aren't they? Because we've got Norwich at the top, 7 points clear. They look like they're going to be champions, but none of the closing gap. I mean, Millwall beat Charlton yesterday.
4-0, yeah.
Do you think? I mean, Leeds are probably going to take that second spot, but if they didn't, it would be a catastrophe.
Well, Grayson said, I think he made a good point, that they want to win the league by winning games themselves and not by other people dropping points. And if they want to do that, they have got to start winning games, because Millwall are on fire. They're absolutely flying. We've got to go to the Den soon, and I'm not looking forward to that.
You're going to go down to Southampton again?
No, that's one game I do fancy Millwall, because I haven't been there since I was a young kid. I can't really remember it, and we got beat 3-0, to be honest. So I'd like to go down there.
Good day out in Millwall.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
It is, it's a good day out.
And I think a lot of what gets said about them is exaggerated. When I was a youngster, I didn't...
Well, you can't get near them now. I mean, it's like a prison when you get off that station.
So, yeah, I'll be going there. I think I'd say Mill could potentially beat pit Leeds to it if Leeds don't get their act together. I mean, they've got so many talented players, Sheffrey, Beckford, Becchio. These are players that could be playing at a higher level, but they're just not firing.
And in relation to that top six, you've got a situation whereby it is sort of top eight, including the Huddersfield and MK Dons. Do you think, I mean, the teams below the top three, i.e. Norwich, Leeds and Charlton, if they were to go up, they're going to struggle, aren't they, in the Championship? They're not going to, you know, they're going to be sort of a Peterborough or a Scunthorpe. Any other team apart from those top two are going to struggle.
I mean, yeah, well, obviously Colchester dipped into the Championship recently and then came straight back down. Oh, no, they had one good season, and obviously the second season they came down. I think, yeah, you're right there. The top three are probably the most equipped to, if they did go up, to survive, and obviously Leeds, all three of them could even argue that they might even be looking to get out of the Championship in the near-term future and get back to the Premiership. I think MK Dons eventually could potentially be a Championship club. It grites me to say it, but I think it's in place. The stadium there, Winkelmann's are giving them a lot of backing. They could eventually become a Championship club, but I don't think they'll get in the playoffs this season. I really don't.
Well, we have got an email from a Brentford fan. There is one out there listening. Brentford, the next 5 years. Sorry about that. Brentford, the next 5 years, where will you be? 15th in Division 1?
I think under Andy Scott we can genuinely mount a playoff push next season, and I don't see why we couldn't be in the Championship.
Have
whether we can sustain
him,
it.
Don't let him get away with that, Rob.
I think we can be in the Championship within the
Will it be an all-seater stadium? Let's get back to basics.
The Griffin Park won't be, but there's plans to move into Lionel Road eventually.
Is that for sure, Lionel Road? Because they've been talking about it for a long time now. That's four or five seasons, haven't you?
There's talks and plans, but there's been a lot of issues with the Barretts are involved, and obviously the housing market hasn't been great, so there's been a lot of issues with that. But I think it's back on track now. Whether it happens by... It's earmarked as 2012 Olympic... like training ground. Whether that happens, I'm not sure. I think that's a bit ambitious, to be fair, to build a ground in the next 2 years.
Okay. Back to the question, where will you be in 5 years' time?
Probably back in League One after flirting with the Championship for a year.
Do you feel that obviously this is a consolidation season?
Yeah.
Next season, do you see A, the money being there, but B, the aspirations to be challenging for
very much? Andy Scott's a winner. He's there to win things. He's got the right mentality. As you're saying, with Warnock as a winner, I think Andy Scott's going to be one of these managers. He's not there to make friends with other managers. He wants to win games. He's not going to go to away games and have air and graces. If he wants his team to win, he'll make sure his team wins. I think he's got also the intelligence of the whole leagues, all like League One, League Two, Championship and non-league. His database of players is unbelievable. Some of these players he's plucking out of nowhere. People like Sam Wood from non-league Bromley have come in, been a revelation. Ryan Dixon couldn't get a game at Plymouth, sliding like in the reserves. He's come out of nowhere, and now we're looking at he's definitely a Championship player.
I don't know who this fan supports. There's no name, but why is Andy Scott so arrogant?
He can afford to be.
Why?
Good answer.
He's well dressed. He's a winner, and he's been successful at a young age.
He's well dressed. Who said that?
Sharp dresser. His style.
Do you base your style of dress on what he wears?
I'm not as sharp as him. I don't think I've got as much money as him, to be fair.
Obviously, you've got this week. You've got, as you said, the games Brighton and Stockport. They're both fighting winnable relegation. Game. Stockport look dead and buried at the bottom there. What do you expect from this week's two games?
I'd be happy with 4 points, but Brighton are a very good sign under Poyet now. I mean, they've also got people like Glenn Murray, who have been scoring goals in this league for a while. Before he was at Carlisle, he scored a lot of goals. So I'd be happy with 4 points. Realistically, I'm not sure if we'll get something at Brighton. Our away form's not great.
OK, well, this is a call-out to all the fans from Chelsea, Fulham, Queen's Park Rangers and Brentford. You can email us. This is the part of the show where we do like your emails after 8 o'clock. Email us 90minutefootballshow at onfmradio.com. We're going to talk quite a bit about the clubs and individual aspects of it, from stewarding to wage caps and everything else, whatever comes up really in the next half an hour, and we hope that you stay tuned to it. We're going to be joined back by David. All four of our guests will be on air after 8 o'clock. So, as I say, you're listening to the 90 Minute Football Show with me, Peter Davis. We'll be back after this.
London 101.4 on FM Sport.
This is the 90 Minute Football Show with me, Peter Davis. I've got all fans here tonight, apart from the Fulham fan. Oh, he got stuck on the way from back from Juve. He was going to tell us everything that happened up there. Tom will be in next Sunday. We are going to sort of talk about various areas within various clubs and what the various subjects, I should say. The one big issue at the moment is if you go to Chelsea, there's absolutely no atmosphere. What can the club do to create an atmosphere, apart from give flags out at big European games?
Oh, I don't know, Peter. You say that, Peter. I mean, it's one of those things that people do like to say. I think, first of all, in the big games, I don't think it's true. If there's any issue at all, for me, it is simply that success breeds expectation. Liverpool, for instance, are one of those teams that are always sort of lauded as having an absolutely brilliant fan base. Now, I remember a few years back, they were in the FA Cup final against West Ham, and the West Ham fans outsang them. The West Ham fans were the ones that you could hear all the way through the game. And the reason for that is because Liverpool were used to playing in sort of major cup finals, whereas for West Ham, it was the big adventure, the big day out, and that's the way it is. So, yes, occasionally in the West Ham games and the Stoke games and the Bolton games, you perhaps aren't going to generate that atmosphere because...
To be fair, you don't really get the atmosphere in any game.
Well, I was going to say, actually, yeah. Pete, you know, I think I accept, hand up, you know, the atmosphere is not anything like it was 10 years ago, or I'm going even further back than that. But I don't think it's just Chelsea. This is the curse of Premiership football. And actually, Liverpool, I mean, that's the biggest joke, you know, where's your famous atmosphere? We were singing that there last year. Because it's the same there. Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal, basically the trouble is that they've attracted a new kind of fan into the Premiership since it's been going. And they don't have that culture of singing and making a noise.
But isn't it the argument for the top four?
I think a lot of the bigger clubs, because clearly that isn't the case with clubs like Stoke. I mean, the West Ham fans, although I haven't been to Upton Park for a while, but I mean, you know, clubs like that will always make a noise. And I think it is a curse that's affected the bigger clubs. And it's the kind of fans that they bring in there. I mean, there are other issues as well at Chelsea. I mean, the CFC UK and the CFC Net Boys have... long been trying to encourage the club to reduce the prices for 16 to 21-year-olds because, you know, one of the malaise of the Premiership obviously is that, you know, the traditional working class fan base has been priced out of it. But I think it particularly hits the 16 to 21-year-olds hardest. And I mean, me and a lot of other of my mates started going when we were that age. And that's when you get them. You get them at that age, you've got them for life. And of that, you know, of course, they're the kids that want to make a lot of noise and have a laugh there, which is what football's supposed to be about.
Yeah, you can't expect them to be forking out 50, 60, 70 quid.
Is that how much it would be for 16 to 21 year
olds? Well, they don't get a concession, put it that way, as far as I'm aware. I mean, you know, coat me if I'm wrong, but. Mm. It's a lot of money.
Joe, QPR, I mean, the atmosphere there hasn't been that great.
Well, it hasn't been, Pete, but we all know why the atmosphere wasn't bad, because the club was so badly run by people with so much money, and it's come right through to the fan base. It obviously went on to the park as well, because the players were picking up on our bad feeling. But I've got to say, again, as we're talking about Rangers, the past two home games, I think the support has really, really lifted, and thank God that Mr... Batia has come in and sorted us out.
I find it a sad state of affairs. I think it's quite a general thing for all home teams around the country. I don't think it's just top four. I mean, you can go to the Championship. It's a culture of away games.
Yeah.
And away fans go and they stand and they sing, yeah, and they sing the whole, yeah, game. And a lot of people actually prefer to go to away games. I know loads of Arsenal fans who don't go to the home games anymore because there is no, you know, there's no atmosphere, and it's the away day out where everyone stands and everyone sings for the whole game. They don't have this at, you don't seem to get this at home games. I suppose a lot of the time because you're sitting in a separate area, especially at Arsenal, the problem is you've got such a big stadium. If you and your mates are sitting on other ends of the stadium and try and get a bit of atmosphere going, it doesn't always work. But what they have done down there is there's a group called Red Action. They've got two blocks, blocks 5 and 6, and what they do, it's a kind of unwritten rule with the stewards, but blocks 5 and 6 stand. None of the stewards come up and gesture with a wink in their eye, sit down, but they don't tell you to sit down, they don't force you to sit down. They actually let those two blocks stand, and they're the loudest blocks in the whole stadium. But if you're the block next to that, and you stood up, you're going to get told to sit down. And I think that's the problem. You kind of, and I always find it, I always try, to be honest, sneak into that area if I don't have a seat there, because they're not going to see me because I'm standing. If I'm sitting in the upper tier, I'm going to walk down and go into the area where they stand and sing.
And we've talked about stewarding before on this show, and I think that's also part of the problem, is, as we said previously, you can't sit, or it's very, very difficult to sit down and chant, or sit down and sing your club songs. You want to be standing up, arms up, you know what I mean? But if you do that, then 9 times out of 10, you're threatened with removal from the ground. So is this part of the problem? Is it the sort of modern stewarding?
Is it not the inconsistencies of it, though? Because, as you say, you go to some grounds, you will be turfed out if you stand up. But if you go to others, you can stand and you can get away with it. Why is that? I mean, in Germany, they do something, say, standing.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of a sensible way of getting, I don't know, allocation of 1,000 people into a corner and allowing them to stand. I mean, what do you think?
They're much more organised in Germany, of course, Pete, so, you know. I mean, it's interesting, it's just picking up what Brendan was saying. I mean, you know, Chelsea have been trying to do a similar thing with the whole kind of return to the shed or reclaim the shed movement, and the club have been quite amenable to that. But even if you do get all of your singing fans in one part of the ground, the one essential thing that has changed since, you know, when I first started going in the 80s, is that you all have a season ticket with a number and your seat on it. So you can't just, like, turn up, meet at the Bovril bar, the tea bar, and then congregate with all your mates who you want to sing with. You're stuck where you are. And if you're stuck in a part of a ground where nobody wants to sing, that's it. What can you do? You can't move.
But at Brentford, for example,
Terracing.
I mean, you must be able to generate some atmosphere behind that goal.
I'll be honest, since we've moved from Brook Road to Elam Road, away fans, basically other end of the goal, and I'd say the atmosphere's lost a bit. But I think before that, when I grew up, I was only a youngster, and there was a thing called Hate Corner at Brentford in New Road. It was near the away fans, in those days it was a terrace. And all my memory as a youngster is that was where the atmosphere came from at Brentford. And I can't really remember, a lot of it gets talked about, that the atmosphere has gone since those days. And obviously a lot of that generation have grown up and now probably have families and kids. And whereas there wasn't that new generation that came through and took hold of it. A lot of those people have now moved to the paddock, seating near the away fans again. And that they do generate a lot of noise. Whereas a lot of my generation probably don't sing a lot. I mean, I don't go a lot with people my age. I go with my dad and his mate. Just kind of a lot of father and son thing that we do. So I probably hold my hand up, and I probably don't get involved enough. But it's not just me, it's I'd say 4,000 other Brentford fans as well.
Joe, I mean, we touched on the stewarding. We'll talk about the stewarding for a couple of minutes. I mean, how do you find it at QPR in terms of stewarding?
Personally, myself, I don't have any problems with the stewards. Where I sit right at the back of the upper tier in the loft. And I've got to say, I stand for 70% of the game, and so do the people in the back row as well. We never have any problems, but I know certainly over in the Q block where you are, Pete, the R block and the P block, there has been rumblings, and it's a shame, really. See, I mean, I'm 6'2", so I chose to stand to get my seat right at the back of the stand. But if you've got someone my size standing up in front of you, you know, it's a difficult one.
There's a degree of common sense. I mean, you go to away games and you stand in right at the back and they get you to sit down. Yeah, I mean, what's it like at Stamford Bridge for away fans? I've seen them stand.
Well, I mean, this is the ridiculous whole, you know, point of this argument. I mean, some of them, like Wigan, I mean, you know, they bring about 5 people, so it doesn't really count.
And Fulham.
But I mean, and they don't have their little clappers to get them going, do they? Yeah. But I mean, most of the away fans who come to the bridge stand up. And you know, and when we go away, we do the same. So you've got a whole lot of the away fans standing up, and yet all the home fans have to sit down. And I mean, there's been instances recently in the Shed End where Chelsea fans have been booted out after something like 7 minutes. We scored within about 5 minutes, and they were still standing up and celebrating the goal. And of course, everybody stands up when you celebrate a goal, and some are a bit slow to get there, and they're getting booted out for that. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable.
If they stood up in the corporate side, would they be turfed out?
I'd like to get invited into the corporate bits once and find out.
Well, stand up during the game.
Oh, yeah.
It's really... I mean, I know it all goes back to what happened at Heysel and things like that and Hillsborough, but surely, I mean, it was... if I'm right in saying, it was caused by overcrowding and allocations of more tickets for a certain area. If you've got an area within the ground, surely it's sensible to say, look, absolutely, this is allocated for 1,000 people to stand.
But well, even with the seats, I mean, you know, if you go to a rock concert at Twickenham or something like that, you don't all have to sit down in your seat. You can get up, stand on your seat and do whatever you want. So
yeah,
what's the difference?
That's exactly what I was about to come in with, is that those, the two examples that you've given there, Heysel and Hillsborough. Hillsborough was amazingly bad policing. The game should have been delayed. Even had it not been delayed, they seem to have tried to solve a problem of overcrowding outside the ground simply by throwing open all of the gates and letting however many thousands of people without tickets into the ground. Heysel was pure thuggery. That was caused by the over-exuberant sort of football thuggery of the 70s and 80s.
We've got CCTV cameras now. We've got a situation whereby you can't move without getting into trouble if you are in trouble.
There is absolutely no reason why with proper policing and with good facilities, which is what we have now for certainly through the Premier League and the Championship, there is absolutely no reason why these large groups can't be controlled, just as David says there happens at rock concerts.
And it's controlled access too. We've all got a season ticket, so they know exactly how many people are going into the ground. So it's not like you're going to get a Hillsborough in the modern game with that kind of ticketing allocation.
And in regards to the costing as well of these particular games, do you think it's sort of, you know, Joe Public, who wants to go and stand, won't go and pay for a ticket because they know for the whole game they're going to have to sit down?
I think there'll be those that actually prefer sitting, and I think there will be those that prefer standing. So for me, the obvious example is to have one terrace and then have your other three stand seated.
I think what Ian said there is spot on. I mean, I myself have noticed those times I've got into that little standing section at Arsenal, there's a lot of boys who aren't happy about it and are complaining, and they call themselves Red Action, and there's a lot of boys who do not like Red Action because they say, I spend £850 a year on my season ticket for my seat, why can't I sit in my seat? You know, I'm paying for this. And I know an awful lot of people who have been moved out of that area. But as Ian said, certain people want to sit, you know. Mm. So it has to be a certain area, and it needs to be accessible for the exact amount of people who want to get in there, because there are people who don't necessarily want to stand.
I mean, when you talk about Chelsea, they're fine because they can pack up their ground for most games unless it's a European tie with not much interest. But there are so many games where you see a stadium, even in the Premiership, where it's half full. Surely clubs should be doing more to get people in there. They talk about sort of recession, but if you're going to go charge your supporters £25, £30, £35 to watch a game, probably much more in London. What do you expect?
It's a shame not to have Tom back from Turin, isn't it? Because we spoke about this last week. Tom was very, very bitter about the number of tickets that Fulham fans had been allocated for the Juve game. And yet, when we watched the game on Thursday night, half the ground seemed to be empty. So what was the problem with doubling, trebling, quadrupling? Did they imagine that 50,000... Fulham fans were going to go out there? Of course not. But they could reasonably have taken 5,000-10,000, and it wouldn't have caused a problem because half of that ground was empty.
Joe, we've got a meeting tomorrow with the QPR hierarchy along with other fans groups as well. One of the subjects will be price per match, if you like, and what we charge for bronze, silver, and gold, ranging from £20 up to £30 up to £35. We have 12,000 crowds, and there's a 6,000 gap. How does a club like QPR fill that 6,000 gap?
Well, it is the season ticket prices for a start. Season ticket holders have had no deal at Loftus Road whatsoever. You can get deals now as a member or as a non-member and get a better deal than we've got as season ticket holders. The gold, silver and bronze just hasn't worked. You know, you're sitting next to someone who's got a bronze ticket, and I've got a gold ticket. I sit next to a bronze ticket. We're watching the same game. There's no partition or anything.
There's £200 difference as well.
It's £200 difference. It hasn't worked. Mm. It really hasn't. There's a lot of disgruntled QPR fans over that. There's a lot of people that haven't come. There's a lot of people that have moved over to the edges, like over to your side, you know, just to be able to afford to watch the Rangers. And
It just doesn't work, Pete. Well,
okay, sorry to interrupt you guys. We're going to come back to the subject after. Going to talk about the costing of season tickets, and we might be able to speak about Rafa Benitez, which I know one or two people want to talk about. But tomorrow's going to be this. It's going to be a bit of a manic Monday.
Point 4 on FM Sport.
We did have a, this is the 90 Minute Football Show, we did have an email in relation to Chelsea, and maybe you can read it out, because I can't,
it doesn't actually have a name, but it says, do Chelsea have fancy dress at all their games? Why do they all dress up as empty seats?
I have a sound effect thing on my podcast, which is tumbleweed. It's a shame I don't have the button with me. I think that line deserves it.
Okay, well, going back to the prices of season tickets, and we spoke before the break about the ridiculous situation whereby you're sitting in a gold seat next to someone who's sitting in a bronze seat and pays £150 less. David, at Chelsea, how is it sort of categorised, and how much does a season ticket cost range?
It depends on what area you're sitting in. It's pretty much stand by stand. I mean, I pay about 750, 800 quid. And I, like Joe, actually, I sit right at the top and at the back of the Matthew Harding upper, which is a pretty good view. I like it because I can stand up, funnily enough. But I think you pay, getting on towards 900 for the west upper and the west lower, which is the new big posh stand. Pretty much the same in the shed end as you pay on the Matthew Harding upper. And I think the east stand's a bit more expensive, which is where a lot of the more sedate fans.
And in terms of league games, how many free
league
games?
Well, that's a really good point, actually, Pete, because how we get stitched up is that my 800 quid buys me every Premiership home game, but that's where the line is drawn. So I actually have to, not only do I have to pay for every League Cup, FA Cup and Champions League match, but because it's Chelsea, that means I have to cough up with quite a lot of money because we tend to have quite good runs in all of them.
Do they give season ticket holders a discount for the cup games?
No, we get no discount.
So you pay the standard.
Well, I mean, you know, being a victim of our own success, what it really entitles you to is to get first in the queue to get the ticket if you're lucky. I mean, I'll give you a good example. The semi-final tickets are going on sale next week, and it's all done on a loyalty point basis. And the first tranche is 91. Loyalty points. Now, I've only got 89, and I've only missed about 3 home games this season. And, you know, so basically, you know, you get a lot of loyalty points for the early League Cup rounds, for example, and the group Champions League matches. It's tough, you know. It's like every man for himself.
So the loyalty points is matched the season ticket price for the following season?
Each game carries a certain amount of loyalty points.
Yeah, that's what we've introduced to QPR,
The so-called less interesting games have more loyalty points, and the really, really big games have very, very few. So Man United, you'll get like one loyalty point.
But it won't dictate how much you pay for a season ticket the following season.
No, I don't think so. I mean, to be really fair to the club, they've actually been very good for the last 2 or 3 years, and they've actually kept the season ticket prices frozen. And actually, the other good thing, and I think this is a lesson for a lot of clubs, is that the League Cup matches, where, you know, a lot of other clubs, you get maybe 10,000, 20,000 people turning up, they've reduced the prices right down to about 20 quid.
Yeah, but they've had to do that because they won't fill the stadium.
That's very true. They were getting a fairly decent attendance, but it clearly wasn't filling up. But the nice thing about that, and one thing I've found, is that it gets a lot of people who used to go a long time ago coming along, who've been otherwise priced out of it, which is a good thing.
It is cheaper to get into Stamford Bridge for a cup game than it is to get into Swindon.
Yeah, exactly. Good.
And as you say, you do see, in fact, in general, more grassroots fans at these cup games compared to...
But the Arsenal put tickets on sale for £10 for their League Cup games, and they're getting close on 60,000.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way to do it. At Loftus Road, we don't do that.
I was quite interested to hear David obviously say you pay 750 to 800, and as a QPR fan, you pay 600, is that right,
David? Yeah, just under 600.
There's a big difference, and when you think of the big difference in league positions from where we are to watching the likes of, you know, Chelsea play Manchester United, play Arsenal, we're watching games like Scunthorpe at home, Reading at home.
But not only that, Pete, there's another pricing structure, the platinum seats.
Yeah.
Where they're just under £700. You know, I know there's not a lot of platinum seats. There's about, I think there's about 200 off the top of my head, like, you know. But again, you know, it as you say, we're playing the likes of Doncaster, Scunthorpe, you know, no disrespect to their supporters that are listening in. And it's a big, big difference.
But are we being ripped off as London fans in general?
I think that's a good point. I mean, you know, because, you know, this is quite, I take this quite personally as a Chelsea fan. Everybody always says, oh, they're the most expensive season tickets in the Premiership. Rubbish. Arsenal and Spurs are way more expensive. But if you're talking about London, yeah, I think collectively we're getting mugged off. If you lot are paying £650 for a season ticket, I can't believe that. That's outrageous.
Oh, no, it's very, very true.
One thing, Pete, I mean, you know, if you pay for a platinum membership at a Keeper, does that mean you get to sit next to Naomi Campbell?
No, you would have got the chance to sit next to Flavio Briatore, the orange one.
you're not going to get models supporting QPR because, of course, they wear the hoops, which is going to have that shortening,
good point,
fattening
mate.
Effect.
Good point.
We have far more better looking ladies down at Loftus Road than you do get at Stamford Bridge. We are going to close in a minute, but in terms of the, you want to touch on Liverpool and obviously the, you know.
Yeah,
Rafa Benitez, you love him, don't you?
I want him to stay!
I'm loving every second of the Rafa Benitez debacle. I mean, let me explain. You know how everybody has one of those hate clubs, and for QPR fans here, of course, it is Chelsea. For me, I was 13 years old in 1980, so all through the 80s, all through my formative years.
So you come on here and lie?
Everything.
13.
They won everything, and they were none too gracious about it either. So to see the mess that they are in now is tremendously gratifying. The mystery for me with Rafa Benitez is why the Liverpool fans like him. He seems to spend more money than Alex Ferguson and get absolutely nothing for it. I mean, Aquilani this season has just been an absolute, oh no, we can't play him in a team that isn't playing very well. That'll just destroy his confidence. He played £20 million for him, man. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we've had one or two, obviously, the Winston Bogards and the Adrian Mutus and the Mattia Kesmans, but not as many as...
How much did Chelsea pay for Malouda? That's the thing. Maybe Aquilani
17?
Might... Exactly, that's not far
million,
off that. And Malouda, maybe we'd say first season he didn't adapt that well.
No, he
maybe
he
Aquilani
didn't.
Could maybe do quite well next season.
Well, he may do, but he may not get the chance, mate, because he's not actually getting any minutes on the pitch.
Yeah. Well, I think the issue with Liverpool is that Benitez has spent a huge amount of money on a lot of players, and he's actually had to sell a lot of them back for maybe half what he paid for them, which really tells you everything you need to know about Benitez as a judge of a player, I think.
Right, well, we are coming to an end. You've obviously, I ask this question every week. I'm going to ask you, David. Is the treble still on, and do you think you're going to get it?
Well, no, I don't think we'll get the treble. I think that's unrealistic, to be really honest. But, I mean, you know, we're still in those three competitions, and we'll go as far as we can, and I hope we do. But, myself, I want the Premiership back.
Yeah, same for me. It's your bread and butter.
So you'd accept losing on Tuesday for the Premiership?
Any double, I'd take your arm off.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we know that if you win the FA Cup, it won't be paraded down the King's Road. Joe, as a QPR fan, we're obviously more happier now under Neil Warnock.
Yeah, a lot happier, Pete. And same sort of question, like, you know, I just want safety, that's all. Because I think, you know, come the summer, I think Neil will be able to get down and really start to sort the club out. You know, hopefully the academy will come back. That would be a great, great thing, like, you know. That's how we lost Raheem Sterling, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about academies next week. That was a good subject to touch on. Stuart, we'll leave your last word with a Brentford fan. You've got big games coming up this week. Stockport and Brighton.
Glad to be back in League One, plodding along, happy as Larry, secured our future financially. Andy Scott's the best young manager in Britain.
Well, there you go. It's not often that you leave a radio show with a Brentford fan giving the last words. But anyway, thanks very much to everyone. Ian, as usual, thanks very much for coming along. David, thanks very much. I hope you come along again. Joe?
Cheers, mate. You are.
You are. Stuart?
Tell very much.
All the best. Well, as I say, you've been listening to the 90-Minute Football Show. We'll be back again next week at the same time as 7. Until then, good night.
From Westminster to Heathrow and Wembley to Wimbledon, 24 hours a day. London's 101.4 on FM.